We go and grab a quick bite.
We watch a movie, then fight.
We're the Fast Food Film Friends.
You're listening to Fast Food Film Friends, the podcast that is now made the same way high school relationships were made back in the early 2000s. Two people talking to each other over landlines for hours while eating unhealthy food in their bedrooms.
That's right. We are coming at you from our closets once again. And Woo! This week, we're doing things a little different. Since there's no new movies out and we're not really eager to go to a drive-thru right now, we're doing our first comfort classic, where we review a widely beloved movie that neither of us have seen before.
That is correct.
And this week, we're talking about the 1999 romantic comedy 10 Things I Hate About You, while eating Lunchables mini hot dogs.
I am I'm very excited for both of these things. Well, the movie we've already seen, but this Lunchable, I don't know why. There's a picture of a platypus on my Lunchable. I don't know if you have the same one.
Yes, I do.
It's a platypus giving a thumbs up, and it's given me a lot of excitement to figure out what's inside. Anyways, from IMDb, the plot summary of 10 Things I Hate About You reads as follows. A pretty popular teenager can't go out on a date until her ill-tempered older sister does.
And from Lunchables.com, they might be mini, but they're big on flavor. Your kids will love these mini hot dogs with mini hot dog buns, ketchup, and mustard. Also includes Capri Sun Roarin' Waters and a Hershey's chocolate bar.
Man, I am... There's only two pictures of these little hot dogs. I'm assuming that we get two tiny hot dogs.
Yep.
And it said, I think I looked up online, it said, like, no need to heat, just eat. And I was so taken aback by that.
Well, I'm very confused because the box gives specific options. It says that about no need to heat, but right below it says heat and eat and gives you heating options. So I think since we each have two hot dogs, we should heat one and eat the other cold.
No,
what do you
I'm
think?
I'm going cold both. Maybe you should go warm both.
I think that makes no sense.
Yeah, that's probably true. I used to eat raw hot dogs a lot as a kid. There's a rabbit on the back as well.
You were raised in the Minneapolis wilderness. That was like all you could find, right?
You know, my dad was I would say notoriously cheap man. He always provided for us, but it was like bare minimum. Let's be as efficient as possible, which is where I get my efficiency when I talk. But raw hot dogs, it was like, this is a ready-to-go meal. Perfect. Let's go. It tastes great. Don't need to heat it up. Even if you heat it up, it doesn't make much of a difference. It's the same thing. So
it just gets sizzly and pops everywhere in the microwave.
Yeah, that's all it does. I usually pan fry mine if I do heat them up, because microwaving a hot dog to me just makes your whole house smell like hot dog, which I don't enjoy.
I appreciate that in the description. I think this is the first time they've ever really called out in a description we've read on this show that this is for your kids.
Yeah.
If you're reading this, it's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's for your offspring. And
well,
these hot dogs, much like our podcasts, perfect for children.
Perfect for children, I would say. And that's why we also have a platypus and a rabbit as a mascot that have no connection to what's inside. It just makes total sense. But I think we're a great show for kids. I did recently find out that my second cousin, Lars, who, you know, his age, I have to say, I'm going to put it around 10, maybe older. I should probably know that, and I don't. And Lars, I apologize. But he recently reached out and said, you know, he's been listening to the podcast, so we've got at least one fan now, which is cool. But he also has apparently learned to swear just from listening to me on this podcast. That's what his mom said. So I'm trying to really lock down the swearing today, Nathan. I'm really going to try.
You can't say that we didn't do anything for the youth of this world.
I think I can go one whole episode without swearing. I think I can.
So, Kevin, you and I have talked about doing some sort of like classic movie review for years.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured there's nothing new in theaters, really. Nothing new coming out on streaming right now that's really calling our name.
Yeah.
There's some stuff coming out in the next couple of months that I'm kind of excited about, but nothing major yet. So figured, you know, let's talk about a movie that's near and dear to people's hearts and that you and I haven't seen before. But even though there's no big movies coming out, there's a lot of movie news happening. A lot of changes happening kind of in the movie industry.
Yes.
That I feel like you and I need to hash out. So like, you and I, big Oscars people. Each year we do our episodes where we run down. We try to catch up on everything that we can for the nominees. And we love following the show and all the drama leading up to it. A couple of weeks ago, the Academy announced that since movie theaters are closed indefinitely, films are no longer required to play in theaters.
Love it.
In order to be eligible for next year's Oscars, but only if they were originally scheduled for a theater release. Because like last month we started seeing some of these movies coming out, The Hunt, Emma, next month there's like a Judd Apatow movie coming out.
Yep.
They're like, they have them available to rent for $20 when they would normally be in theaters.
Can I ask if you have rented a $20 movie like that yet?
No, I haven't. And I mean, I don't know. All the movies that I can think of for this from this year that I would be willing to pay $20 for have like been pushed, or they just haven't announced any kind of video on demand deal for it. Like the ones that are coming out are just things that I'm like, I can wait 3 months and pay $4 to rent that. I don't need to watch that right now.
Yeah, I don't understand how like Trolls 2 made so much money at $20. I think it was just parents like, good God, kids, go watch something. We can't handle it anymore. Sure, we'll pay $20 if you sit in this other room for an hour and a half.
Right. And I mean, I read some like anecdotal stories about parents who, so the rental, it's a 48-hour rental, $20. Mm-hmm. And obviously like if the family all goes out to the theater and they spend $50-$60 on tickets, like the studio is making less money from them now when they spend $20 just at home, one household. Mm-hmm. But like, I read stories about people who rented the movie like every weekend after the month after it came out. Because if you think about like, if you got a 2 or 3 year old kid loves these kind of movies, like they don't understand the difference between a $20 rental and like a movie that's on Netflix. Like if it's showing on their TV at their house, they want to keep watching it.
Yeah.
They don't get like, oh, I'm sorry, Dad. I don't want to, you know, stress our financials right now. They're like, I want to hear those songs over and over and over again.
Yep.
So the Universal, the studio that put out this movie, came out and said this movie in the first 3 weeks made $100 million domestically. Wow. So this is Trolls 2. The first Trolls in its entire theater run made $153 million domestically.
Jeez.
It is wild how they've made about as much money, you know, from home, a digital release, which is crazy.
But it's only because these families with 4 to 5 kids, even 2, 3, 4 kids, they're trapped inside. Like you said, I mean, I remember when I told Aiden, like, oh, yeah, that movie, you have to buy it, though, if we want to watch it. Like, if you click that movie, we're going to have to buy it. It costs money. And the look on his face was like, what? This it costs money for me to hit this button? And I was like, yes, please don't. But they don't.
He's like,
understand.
Where do I put the money?
Exactly. They don't. Yeah. Let me tell you, he's got no concept of money whatsoever, but it's gotta be repurchases by families who just have so many kids are like, whatever we'll do whatever it takes to just get this on our TV for time away and just to have them fully occupied by singing trolls. I don't know anybody who's seen that movie. I don't know if it's any good at all, but I'm astounded by how much money it's made.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that I think a kid's movie is like the perfect guinea pig for this kind of experiment, because like Universal came out and they said, you know, it made $100 million in 3 weeks in the US, and we are going to consider releasing movies on video on demand the same day as we release them in theaters going forward, even beyond this crisis.
Yeah.
And so then AMC comes out and they said, no way.
They were not happy.
And they said, we will, if you do that, we will not show your movies anymore. And like, AMC has no leverage right now. Like, they're closed.
Our empty theaters are not going to show anything.
They're on the verge of bankruptcy, but like, they're hoping other theaters will stand up with them and say, no, that's not how this is going to be moving forward. But like, at the same time, it's tough because going forward, like, even once theaters are open, what percentage of people do you think are even going to think it's worth going to a theater anytime soon?
Trust me,
not that many.
No, I absolutely fundamentally love the theater going experience, and I cannot imagine me going to a theater this year, in all honesty. Like, I miss it so much, but until I find one that has like a self-contained, consistently sanitized seat for me, it just doesn't seem worth it. And it's sad, but yeah, I don't see it either. I do love that Regal Cinemas came in for like half a day and said like, yeah, we're with AMC, and then they were like, oh, you know what, no we're not. They turned the table pretty quick there.
And so there's a report in the Daily Mail, and it's all rumor right now, but there's been talks between Amazon and AMC theaters regarding a buyout, and like, AMC has already been struggling for a while, even before all of this, and now they're on the verge of going under very soon. And in comes one of the richest corporations in the world to potentially bail them out. And it's a corporation that just so happens to own a film studio, Amazon Studios. And like, for those who don't know, it's illegal for a studio to own a theater, and it has been since 1948. There was a whole Supreme Court case about it because they decided that the studios who had control of all the theaters, it was, you know, a monopoly. So they broke everything up. And like, in the long run, it was great for independent cinema. Like, it allowed art house theaters and like independent filmmakers to thrive. And, you know, for years now, we've been seeing a conglomeration of our media. You know, Disney, their market share in the movie business is just insane. And, you know, up until now, a company like Disney can't own a theater, but the current Justice Department announced last year they plan to basically strike down those antitrust rules that have been in place since 1948. Now, of course, there's going to be court battles, so no one knows what's really going to happen. But, you know, imagine a world where an Amazon or a Disney owns a theater. Like, if Amazon owned AMC, let's say your Prime membership lets you see a certain number of movies a month for no charge, kind of like the AMC A-List currently does, a service that you and I both use and love. And then a company like Amazon, just for regular customers, they can slash prices. You know, they can afford to have theaters be a loss leader. They can afford razor thin margins or even losing money.
They can afford to not charge $17 for one box of Raisinets.
And then what happens to the independent theaters that don't have that flexibility?
Well, it's not even that, but it's what does Amazon choose not to show from competing studios? That's concerning. I feel like with coronavirus right now, there's a lot of cases being made as in terms of, you know, hey, we need to allow businesses to merge and become conglomerates because that's the only way they're going to survive in this environment. And it's a little scary in a lot of ways, because if I was Amazon, which I'm not, unfortunately, but I know that if I was able to get this legalized by a theater chain, I'm showing my stuff 24/7. The chances of me letting in independent things or, you know, anything from a competing studio is so low. And then it's going to be, oh man, we've got to drive like 4 hours to go see this movie all the time.
Right.
It's just, it's very concerning. It's very, very, and that's why I wish, again, I really wish that I could support my theater somehow, and especially AMC, because they've been so good to me on their A-List.
They have,
but there's just like no way for me to, and other than drive-in theaters, I really don't see myself going to a theater in a very long time.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I hate to see it. And, you know, speaking of things that I hate.
Wait, like 10? 10 things you hate?
I think 10's good, yeah.
10 seems good.
You know, our last episode was almost entirely about the things that we've been enjoying during quarantine. We gave a lot of praise to a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
All sorts of glowing recommendations from both of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we thought that in keeping with the spirit of the movie we watched this week, we should dedicate this segment of Nimble News to things that we hate and call it Hasty Hates. And we'll do five each, which all together makes 10 things we hate.
Quentin Tarantino's Hasty Hates. I am very excited about this. I think it's a good way to put our energy. Let us vent. Everyone's struggling right now. So, you know, let's just air the stuff that's been bugging us, and let's just get it out there quickly.
I think it'll feel good. How about I start us off?
Sure.
Kevin, as I hope it one day reads on my tombstone, I'm a curious guy who loves his sweets. And a few days ago, I learned about a bizarre new collaboration, Chips Ahoy Sour Patch Kids Cookies, which are available in stores for a limited time only. And I knew that I'd be up all night wondering what on earth these tasted like if I didn't try one as soon as possible. So I picked up a box at Target with a curbside order. Now, before I go any further, I'll read from ChipsAhoy.com. The new Sour Patch Kids limited edition flavor features the crunchy, sweet texture of a Chips Ahoy cookie combined with sweet and sour candy pieces inspired by Sour Patch Kids candy.
Inspired by.
For everyone listening, I would recommend Googling Chips Ahoy Sour Patch Kids so you get an idea of what they look like, because the picture on the box is pretty spot on. Each cookie has a few chocolate chips that are dyed to match, one of the various colors of Sour Patch Kids, and then throughout the cookie, there's a bunch of those small bits of the sweet and sour candy. So, you know, I picked up this order, got home, opened the box, and the first thing I noticed was all the cookies looked slightly burnt. They were, like, dark around the edges in a way that you would not expect store-bought Chips Ahoy cookies to be. But I figured maybe they're still, like, nailing down the recipe, so it's understandable, I guess. After one bite, it became clear to me that these cookies were a mistake. And I don't mean the decision to create them was a mistake. What I mean is that I don't think there was a decision to create them. I think there was a mishap at the snack factory that led to a mass amount of Sour Patch Kids-inspired candies, tainting a large batch of Chips Ahoy cookies, and they thought to themselves, we could throw out millions of cookies, or we just whip up some new packaging and hope that enough suckers try them that we make our money back. There is no way that these cookies passed any level of quality assurance or focus group feedback or anything like that. They are downright gross. And this is coming from someone who can at least tolerate just about any sugary treat.
Yeah.
I hate these cookies, and I hate that I felt compelled to try them in the first place.
Nathan, let me tell you, this is a perfect analogy to why AMC and Amazon should not merge. You got two competing candy factories, both struggling with Corona. Nobody's got, you know, time or money for sweets and snacks, or Sour Patch Kids are losing out on their movie theater margins. And it's, you know, this is what happens. You let these companies merge and disasters occur.
If you sent Bezos one of these cookies, he would change his mind about his business plan entirely.
I think he could. I think he might. I while you were talking, because I was absolute, I had not heard of these at all. I just Googled them, and at every picture people have posted on social media of these, they all look oddly burnt. Yes. And also disgusting. And I'm mainly repulsed by the fact that you actually bought these.
This is what I do for the people.
Nobody wants to.
And I'm here to hopefully prevent anyone from consuming one of these.
I almost want to try one. Do you still have some?
I have the entire box minus the few that I ate when I got home.
Wait, you ate a few?
Oh yeah, I mean I had to have a few.
Sure,
because the first one could have been a dud.
Oh yeah.
A misfire.
Definitely, yeah.
But no, there's a consistency.
Okay. Well, why don't you mail me like two just in a plain white envelope. Don't lick it. Tape it shut. That's the new thing.
I promise to do that.
All right. Excellent. Can't wait for that grease soaked envelope to get to my mailbox.
It's just got like purple dye dripping down the bottom.
Oh God. I want to sit down with a mail person and talk to them about like the weirdest things they've put in people's mailboxes. Cause that'd probably be up there. I hate my dining room table. Now, let me say, as a dining room table, this thing is great. It's huge. It's a good old rustic farmhouse table. It could seat 10 easily, but I hate it. I hate it with a burning passion as a desk. I've been working from home since early March, and with me being relatively tall and having just a laptop set on this table, it is well over a foot below my eye line. My posture, neck, and back have never been in worse shape because I either have to slouch as I normally do or crane my neck down to see the screen. For Zoom calls, I might as well set my laptop on the ground and stand in front of it. The angle is so bad. I've been stacking up board games and using those as kind of a laptop stand for Zoom calls so I can at least get the camera level with my face. So I have about 7 board games underneath my laptop, but still not the best. If I had a separate keyboard, I could use the board game pile as a constant stand and be fine. But currently, I have to choose between the screen being at eye level with me or my wrist breaking to type and me becoming Quasimodo. I miss my standing desk at work so much. And you know what? My dining room table just really needs to stay in its lane.
You know, as someone who used to sit at your dining room table on a regular basis and hasn't in months, I'm just going to say, you don't know what you got till it's gone, Kevin.
Trust me, it's a nightmare. And I've been sitting in the same chair. Just all I do is sit in different places in my house. Ugh, I hate it. I hate it.
I talked in our last episode about how much I enjoyed The Matrix, which I had just seen for the first time. So last week, I decided to watch the sequel, The Matrix Reloaded. And I hate this movie.
Oh my God.
It is a classic example of the type of sequel where the filmmakers thought, all right, if we rehash a bunch of story elements from the first one, then throw in bigger action set pieces and more characters and huge stakes, then it has to be great because it's like the first one, but way bigger. Which was also the thought process behind Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, which is another movie that I think is garbage. The Matrix Reloaded ends on a cliffhanger, and I am completely okay hanging on that cliff for a while because I have zero interest in watching the third one anytime soon.
Let me tell you, the third one is definitely better. But, Nathan, what I know you would love is the Animatrix.
I can't wait to watch that. That is on my list for sure. Would you recommend watching it before or after the third one?
You might as well finish the live action and get those just checked off.
So for those who don't know, it's like a series of short films, right? Yeah. Like different animators, different styles.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds awesome. I'm more excited for that for sure than I am for finishing these movies. The only reason I'm going to actually finish this series is because the fourth one is coming out or supposed to be coming out next year.
What?
And I have to be caught up before then. You do not know they got a fourth one.
Well,
a lot of cast members are on board.
Great. I am also on board. I feel like I was the perfect age when I first watched those movies where I was just like, man, black leather and slow-mo and cool powers are the best things in the world.
I will say, like, the second film is all of the style of the first one. Plus, like, there's even the CGI is like a big step up. Like, the budget was way bigger. Like,
oh, yeah.
The outfits are cool. I mean, the aesthetic, they really took it to its extreme, and I liked looking at it, but I just thought that in terms of the story, the ideas, I'm just like, this is all in the first one. There's nothing new here.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's actually a fair argument. I won't contest that one too much. I mean, it's all really the same stuff from the first one. But I'm excited. Watch the third one. Let me know your thoughts. And then let's get together 6 feet apart and watch the Animatrix.
Perfect.
My son Aiden got a whatchamacallit candy bar in his Easter basket. I've seen these throughout my life, but I had never really tried one. I kind of, in my mind, I always lumped them in with Almond Joys and Mounds bars that were just trash in general. I actually bought this candy bar for him as the Easter bunny. I will say I had to run down to my little corner store because it was quarantine. I didn't have the best candy, so I really just grabbed like one of every candy they had. And a whatchamacallit happened to be this. We decided to split his whatchamacallit the other day. And after my first bite, I realized that I absolutely hate that I just discovered how astoundingly delicious and well-composed this candy bar is. Peanut butter flavored Rice Krispies topped with caramel, coated in chocolate. It's like a better version of Scotcheroos. And I am so insanely mad. That was a point right there where I didn't swear because I was going to say a swear word instead of insanely, but mark it up as one avoided. I am so mad that I've lived almost 30 years on this planet without trying one. I hate how many missed opportunities I had to try this thing. And it is candy bar perfection. Also, my research on this candy bar led me to Hershey's website where you can find info on all their candy bars, and as it turns out, leave reviews. I looked up the king-size whatchamacallit that we had shared, and there was only one review from 3 months ago from a man named John the Student in Orient, Ohio, who gave it 5 stars, and his review lines up perfectly with my thoughts. Here it is. It was the best thing ever. When I first took a bite, it felt like a slap in the face from heaven. Way to go, John the Student. I'm so glad we've both now been blessed with the knowledge of how amazing these candy bars are. Everyone should go get whatchamacallits.
Man, I am right in your boat in that I've never had them before, and that sounds like the perfect candy bar.
I know. I think Aiden was legitimately scared by my reaction to my first bite, because I was like, it probably seemed like I was having a heart attack.
In addition to The Matrix, another movie series that I recently dipped my toes into for the first time is The Godfather, the first of which I absolutely adored. And since then, I've finished the trilogy. I watched Part 2 and Part 3. Now, I completely understand why some people say that The Godfather Part 2 is as good as, if not better than the first. It is a remarkable character drama, mm-hmm. and it's one of those movies that, as it went along, I wasn't sure how it would all come together, but then it just ends with a wallop and ties up so perfectly, and it's just one of those powerful endings that you keep thinking about for weeks after you watch it. I do think I prefer the first one over part two. I think it's more like entertaining from start to finish, but both films, extraordinary. I'm so glad I finally got around to seeing them. Then I watched The Godfather Part 3. And I hate that this movie exists.
Mm.
I jotted down some notes on the film after I watched it, and it was basically just a list of grievances. But I was so curious about how this movie turned out the way it did that I decided to do some research. And I think rather than reading my list of things I hated about this movie, I'm just going to highlight a few of the things I learned in my research instead. First of all, Kevin, you actually might remember this when we hosted that Q&A on The Outsiders, but in 1981, Francis Ford Coppola directed a film called One from the Heart.
Yeah.
And it was such a bad flop that it basically left him financially ruined for many years. The budget was $26 million on that movie, and it made less than $700,000. And Coppola has publicly stated that the only reason he took up Paramount's offer to make a third Godfather film was because he was so desperate to recover financially. The second thing I learned is that the first two Godfather films were adapted from Mario Puzo's original novel, and the third one was not.
Mm-hmm.
It was new material. Now, the screenplay was still written by Puzo and Coppola together, who wrote the screenplays for the first two, but I think this is key. They did not want to call it The Godfather Part 3. They didn't think of it as a conclusion to a trilogy. They thought of it as an epilogue to the original two-part story, and they even had a completely different title in mind. But Paramount Pictures would not budge. They required that it be called The Godfather Part 3. And lastly, and probably most importantly, for those who don't know, Sofia Coppola plays Mary Corleone in this film, which is the main character's daughter. It's one of the central roles. And Sofia Coppola is the real-life daughter of the director, Francis Ford Coppola. And this was her first major acting role.
Yeah.
And her performance is definitely the most widely criticized aspect of this film, and I already knew that going into it, so I thought, it can't be that bad. But it is. It is an awful performance. And I assume that Coppola casted her in this role because he had some sort of like personal connection to the story, or maybe he was just trying to boost her career. Then I learned that Coppola had originally casted someone else in that role, and it was Julia Roberts.
Ugh.
But she ended up having a scheduling conflict, and so instead, he casted Winona Ryder.
Hmm?
But at the very last minute, she had to drop out for health reasons. So then he asked his daughter, Sofia Coppola, to take the role. And many years later, she opened up about how she didn't even really want the role. She wasn't that interested in acting at all, but she did it to help out her dad since he was in such a tough spot with Winona Ryder dropping out just before filming began. Basically, all this to say, The Godfather Part 3 is the result of a long series of very unfortunate circumstances, and now that I know that, I think I'm able to view it more sympathetically, but it doesn't really change the fact that I will probably never watch this movie again in my lifetime.
I can't agree more with almost everything you just said. I own all three Godfathers, and 1 and 2 have gotten probably three times as many watches in my life than the third. She is terrible in that movie. I'm going to send a Chips Ahoy Sour Patch Kid, The Godfather Part 3, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say a mini hot dogs Lunchable to the head of Amazon just to tell him this is what happens when you combine things out of, you know, desperate need and it's not necessary. I hate the effect that quarantine and isolation is having on people I care about. It's just hitting everybody I know so hard, and whether it's layoffs or the virus affecting them or their families or just their mental health or outlook on life, it sucks to talk to so many people who are just feeling hopeless right now. And I've, throughout my life, I've struggled with depression, and I've talked to friends who are just now encountering their first bout with it, and it's just heartbreaking. And it's insane how important socialization and interaction with people are to our general well-being, and seeing how quickly being cut off from that can affect people is nuts. I saw a tweet yesterday that really hit me, like, in a weird way. It said, for those of us currently healthy and taking isolation seriously, right now we live in an infinite present. No future plans, no anticipation of travel or shows or events or celebrations. It's an endless today, never tomorrow. And I know that I've caught myself kind of feeling that in that endless today, the infinite present. And I know this is a comedy podcast, and this is definitely a downer, but I think it's important that people acknowledge that other people are feeling that way too, and that you can really, I've found, reach out to all your friends, because everyone's stuck at home and likely feeling the same way, and it's just so important to talk to somebody. And telehealth visits are so easily available, and you know what, even reach out to us, because we've got nothing to do but respond to people. But I hate it, and I can't wait till we can get together with people again and hug people and smile and laugh at jokes and not have to be far apart from each other.
I think that the part of it that I least expected is just the drastic highs and lows.
Yeah.
There are some days when I wake up and I'm just feeling okay.
Yeah.
And I can work. I tell myself that I'm kind of past it all. I'm like, I finally have kind of mentally overcome what I've been going through.
Yeah.
And the next day I am in absolute despair.
Mm-hmm.
I spiral. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to figure out factors. Like, I'm really trying to hit a balance of news intake, because,
yeah,
you know, up until 150, 200 years ago, humans didn't know what was happening outside of, like, their village,
mm-hmm.
right? And then, like, the newspaper came, and then eventually the radio came, and the television came, and the internet came.
Twitter.
And we're aware of everything in the world all at once.
Yep.
And our brains are not built to process such suffering.
No, and that's what's so hard for me too, is because I've been my entire life a heavy consumer of information and news. Like, I, in fifth, sixth, seventh grade, I would watch Good Morning America every day before I went to school. Like, I love learning about what the hell is happening in the world, and when it's all, like, pretty rough news, it weighs on you. I'm working on finding that balance too. I have not yet, but no, it's too much. Like, with everything going on in the world, being isolated from people you love and care about and want to spend time with, and then also on top of that, you know, being stuck, a lot of people are stuck with people who they might not want to be stuck with, but
yeah.
On top of that, being stuck either by yourself or, you know, with the same person for a long period of time, it's just amazing to me, because it's people who I've talked to previously, you know, about you know, my experience with depression have been like, man, I just could never imagine feeling that way, and then now they come to me and say, like, I fully understand, and it's just a really weird situation to see people who, you know, I don't think that by any means there's kind of a poster for depression or anything like that, but there are some people in my life who I'm like, man, they've got a really good thing going on, and I could never see them feeling the way that I have felt previously, and it's those people reaching out to me now who are like, how do I do, you know, how do I get out of bed in the morning? And it's weird.
Yeah.
Especially when it's, yeah, I don't know. I knew this one would be a downer, but I felt like putting it in nonetheless.
I can say for myself, any semblance of normalcy brings me a lot of joy.
Yes.
And one of those things is talking about crappy food with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy you're doing this right now.
Yes.
And I'm also happy to move on to a very petty complaint.
Oh, my next one is so petty.
Taylor and I are always looking for new games that we can play together on our Nintendo Switch, and we've always been...
Nathan, wait, can I ask you to hold, because I want you guys to order a game that I absolutely love. It's a board game. When you said game, I want to get a Nintendo Switch, but there's a board game that I really want you two to get, because it's the best two-player game I think I've ever played, other than, like, chess.
Let's hear it.
It's a two-player game. You can play up to four, but it's meant for two. It's called Santorini, and it is the simplest, most... it sounds weird to say the simplest, most complicated game, but it is very simple in its structure and gameplay, but is so complicated and just the best game in the world, so you should get Santorini. Anyways, I apologize for interrupting.
I promise I will. But I'm going to continue with things that make me mad, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're looking for new games for our Switch, looking for ways to stay active. So a few weeks ago, we bought Just Dance 2020, mm-hmm. which is the 11th game in the franchise. If you're not familiar with Just Dance, it's a game where you and your friends each hold a controller and try your best to perform dance routines to pop songs in unison with characters on the screen. And the game scores you on how well you did. So it's sort of like Guitar Hero, but for dancing. And every year they release a new version with a new batch of songs. Now, I don't hate Just Dance 2020 at all. I think this game is a blast. I played one of the first Just Dance games when I was in high school. I enjoyed it then. I enjoy this one now. But what I do hate is that this game has shown me how badly my body is already deteriorating. I am 26, and I work out fairly often. But after three or four songs on Just Dance, I have to sit down and chug some water. And every time we play, I am so sore the next morning. My shoulders are sore. My hips are sore. Last time I rolled my ankle, so that hurt for days. Oof. I am falling apart, and that realization has made me pretty sad. But these songs are too fun to stop playing, so I'm just going to keep dancing to my grave.
I will say, as a soon-to-be 30-year-old dad, it only gets worse every single day. I woke up today, and my left side was so tight and contorted and felt like somebody was jamming a knife into my rib cage. And it's just been that way. It still is all day. And I did nothing yesterday. I did absolutely nothing. And it's just like, you know what? Nah, you're not getting off that easy. We're going to give you something to worry about today. It's enjoy your youth while you can. You got about three more years till it's just hell.
As Andy Bernard once said, I wish there was a way to know you were in the good old days before you left them.
That's right. That's right. Well, you're on the tail end of them, but you're still in them. I've got about a month and a half, 2 months left. I want to preface this one with the fact that I know it is a huge first world problem and is not actually a big issue. And I thoroughly appreciate grocery store workers and the risks they're taking going into work and doing so much to help everyone else in their communities. But this is my podcast, so I get to vent about things. I hate online grocery store shopping. I hate it so much. And here's why. I'm going to give you a list of reasons why. It takes first reason. It takes forever to find everything you need. I'm much more of a let me go into the store, walk down the aisles, grab whatever I need, and be gone. It just, I don't want to have to type in everything I want. You know, I usually never made lists. Now I have to make lists because if I forget, then I have to do another online order and there's a minimum. It's a nightmare. Reason number two. I miss random moments when I could be walking down an aisle and see something that is totally not necessary and 100% not on my list, but it calls out to me. So I splurge and I grab some random bag of chips or cheese or candy or something. I want something unexpected to pop into my grocery list so badly. Reason number three, and really the main thing that made me list this as one of my hasty hates, substitutions and replacements should not be an option. If you don't have what I want, don't fucking... Oh! I'm so sorry, Lars. Don't say that word. That was my one swear. I've ruined it. God. Oh, I just get fired up about this. They shouldn't be an option because when you sub in store brand paper towels in place of my thick boy bounties, I'm gonna scream. I cannot handle this. It is a nightmare. It's the same with toilet paper. I've been stuck using what I assume is a brand that was founded right after the founder watched the episode of The Office where Dwight D-plies toilet paper. Give me what I asked for or give me death, because I can't handle these substitutions anymore.
I just got an idea for an online grocery store shopping website where there's no search bar. There's no, like, category list. There's literally just you have to scroll down the page, and there's pictures of every single food as if you're scrolling down an aisle.
I'd like that, like, a Google Street View of your grocery store, and you can just peer around, and maybe there's somebody walking by. Oh, who's that? I'd sign me up for that 100%. I miss the experience.
Kevin, a couple episodes ago, you gave me a homework handoff,
ooh,
which is the part of Nimble News where one of us assigns the other to watch or eat or experience a certain thing, and that person must report back with their thoughts before they're able to return the favor with a homework handoff of their own.
I am so upset that you are using Hasty Hates to get back to me on this.
Your assignment for me was to watch a 2017 film called Band Aid, which is two words, Band Aid. Now, at the time, this movie was streaming on Netflix, which is how you'd originally watched it. That was years ago.
It was literally like 3 months ago. I just want to make that clear.
I waited too long, and it's no longer available to stream for free, so I had to pay $4 in order to do my homework, but I did it. I watched Band Aid, which is a movie about a young couple that is constantly getting into arguments, and their therapist tells them to try expressing their feelings in a more constructive way. So they decide to turn their fights into song lyrics. Now, I think this movie paints a very authentic picture of how, you know, any amount of friction between two people can kind of manifest in unhealthy ways and spiral out of control. There's some heavy moments that hit me really hard. Mm-hmm. And there's also lots of great laughs. Fred Armisen plays their creepy neighbor, yes, and he just steals so every scene good. He's in.
So good.
But mainly I really loved how grounded these two main characters were. It felt very true to life. But now for the thing that I hate about this movie, which is that everything I've said so far only applies to about the first half. Because for me, the plot in the second half totally fell apart. It starts out feeling so organic and nuanced. It felt like a very balanced depiction of these two people and their flaws. But then it reaches a point where I thought it just threw all that out the window just for the sake of adding some drama. And it kind of ripped me out of the movie because they no longer felt like real people. They felt like actors reading bad lines for the sake of, you know, advancing the story. And then by the end, the lesson of the movie is just explained out loud by a random character in a very black and white way, so that the husband character just magically has all the answers handed to him. It was just so disappointing because I loved the movie at first. I thought it was super unique and truthful and charming, but then for me, by the end, it was none of those things, which was a bummer for me. But now it's time for me to give you a homework handoff of my own. Great. One that I'm very excited about is a 2018 film that's streaming on Netflix, at least for now. It's called Freaks. And I would urge you not to look up this movie.
This was nominated for my movie club last week.
You watched it?
Saturday. No, it was nominated, and it was the second place runner-up to my choice, which won.
Wow.
So, but I read about it. I'm very intrigued by it. I also made the mistake because my friend nominated this movie for my movie club. We pick a theme. Everyone picks a movie that fits the theme. We vote on them. Mm-hmm. He nominated Freaks, and I typed in Freaks movie to Google to figure out, you know, I'd do a little PowerPoint for my movie clubs because I'm the absolute worst. And so I put, like, the picture, the synopsis, and, you know, year it came out, what it's streaming on, into a PowerPoint. And I was like, is it this movie? And the first thing you see when you type in, like, Freaks movie is, why is Freaks movie banned in like 30 countries? And I started reading these articles about like this movie features physically deformed people in horrifying ways, blah, blah, blah. And I texted my buddy like, it seems kind of dark, but I mean, okay. And he's like, yeah, that's fine. And then I realized there's another like a movie from like the 1930s called Freaks, which is terrifying and banned in 30 countries. And the newer one is not that, so
slightly different.
Slightly different. So I'm very excited to watch Freaks. Actually, I am genuinely excited because he said he heard good things too.
I would say, you know, you said you already read about it. I'll read the description now for the listeners. From IMDb, a bold girl discovers a mysterious new world beyond her front door after she escapes her father's protective and paranoid control. I've been wanting to mention this movie on this show, but it's one of those that I just think is its best experience if you know as little as possible. And so I figured what better way to get you to watch this movie than to make you watch it? Because I really think you'll like it. So that is your next homework handoff, Freaks on Netflix.
Nathan, this is my last hasty hate.
Let's hear it.
I hate Nathan for his review of Band-Aid. No, I'm just kidding. I hate that every season of Community is now streaming on Netflix. It has become the only thing I watch almost every day and is taking sweet, precious time away from great movies and other TV shows which deserve my beautiful eyes. Now, I loved Community when I used to watch the new episode every week. I haven't watched it in years, and I started rewatching it when it hit Netflix, and I am so in love with this show, even more than I remember. It is so absurd. Abed and Troy are amazing, and I am 100% in love with Dean. They have these standalone episodes that are just 20-minute montages to classic films or TV or characters. The paintball episode, the space simulator episode, there's a Goodwill Hunting episode. All of them are just perfect 20-minute escapes from the world, and I can't recommend it enough. If you have not watched Community, you need to get on this show immediately and start watching it, and then start hating it as it takes over 80% of your viewing time. If you're like me and you've seen it before, but you are curious if it still holds up, start rewatching it. Somebody sent me a text the other day that people who struggle with anxiety are going back to shows they've already rewatched like 10 times because there's no chance of anything surprising popping up. And it is kind of nice to watch a show where you know what's going to happen. But it's also super nice when that show is absolutely hilarious and has some of the best writing of all time. I hate how much I love Community because it's the only thing I want to watch.
That is all the time we have for Hasty Hates. Now let's go ahead and rip open those Lunchables and eat those mini hot dogs. So the box says to heat the hot dog, each one for 10 to 15 seconds.
That's not these even are some tiny dogs. Have you opened the box yet?
I have not, but I remember these. These are very small dogs.
Okay, let's talk about this first. I have never, ever heard of mini hot dog Lunchables in my life. You are like 4 years younger than me. And we had the most, you know, innovative Lunchable creation in my life, in my childhood, was Pizza Lunchables, which changed the game. These mini hot dogs, I thought, came out in the last, like, year, because I had never, ever seen this before.
Oh, no. These have been around since I was in, I mean, I would say early grade school. This is like, late 90s.
You're telling me you've had this before.
Here's what I'm going to say, and you're going to think I'm exaggerating. I had a lot of Lunchables growing up. All kinds. I didn't have one that I stuck with.
Your stature shows it.
If I had to guess, if I had to rank them in the order of how often I ate them, I think this is one of the top ones. I've actually had these many, many, many times in my life. And they were, I mean, only cold. This is a cold lunch item.
No need to heat, just eat.
That's exactly right. And it's just kind of baffling to me that, from what I can remember, this Lunchable, I mean, it was my entire lunch.
Yeah,
I don't remember packing more with it. And it's two mini hot dogs.
That's one thing.
And a piece of candy.
I'm so intrigued about it. It's like other Lunchables usually have like a well-balanced selection. Like, I feel like they spent all the... They thought of the hot dogs. They thought of the condiments. And then they were like, oh, shit, we need to spend money on fresh bread. And their budget was blown because I feel like it needs like apple slices or anything else that's not just bread or meat or sugary sauce.
I mean, as far as the food groups go, like the ketchup does contain tomatoes.
Barely.
And mustard, that's a seed. So
is that a food group?
That's in the vegetable family, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, because only vegetables grow from seeds.
That's exactly right. And then the Capri Sun. That's mostly sugar.
Mine's actually cherry, so that counts as a fruit. And then milk chocolate, cocoa grows as a seed, so it is, you know, that's another vegetable. So, you know what? I guess you're right. Well-balanced meal.
So I'm going to go grab that from the fridge.
Okay.
And we'll meet back here in a few.
Nathan, the fact that your parents thought this was an acceptable meal for a growing child honestly concerns me. I opened the box and I found two hot dogs, which were wrapped essentially like beef jerky because they, I'm assuming, have as much sodium as beef jerky. And then two buns kind of cryogenically wrapped with some air involved. I don't know what that situation's all about, but I'd say these hot dogs are about 2 inches. The buns are about an inch and a half. There's two hot dogs.
Yeah, we're gonna post some good pics on the gram for sure.
Definitely. And then there's just a Hershey's bar and a Capri Sun and there's a Lunchables ketchup and a Lunchables mustard, which I assume are just mainly plain sugar dyed yellow and red. And I can't believe you've eaten this before.
I did enter middle school with a BMI of 2.
I believe that.
All right, so I already dressed my dogs with the ketchup and mustard.
I just dressed mine. I did not do a good job. I'll tell you that much.
I am going to chow down on my warm one. I went 10 seconds for a single dog.
I went 15 for a single dog because, you know, I'm a all in or all out kind of guy. The bun already ripped at the bottom. This tiny ass bun. Good God, this is going to be... You know what? The thing is, though, you can't mess up a hot dog. You just can't, because it's just blended goo.
Famous last words, Kevin.
It's just blended goo in some kind of casing, mainly salt. It's going to taste good. I've eaten every hot dog you can imagine, and I've never encountered a bad hot dog, let me tell you that much.
And now we take our first bite.
Dive in. All right. Okay. The fact that each one of these hot dogs is about an inch and a half long, the amount of condiments they give you is so overwhelming that all I taste is ketchup and mustard.
Oh, yeah. I only used a small fraction of my condiments.
I emptied them out.
Jeez.
That's what Lunchables is all about. Lunchables give you exactly what you need for lunch. They don't give you extra. They want you to use it all.
They give you leftover mustard to barter with at your lunch table, so you can hopefully trade for something that will give your body any nutrition, a carrot stick, anything.
Trade your leftover mustard for real fiber.
These buns are very thick. These are some little chodes for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I just don't get why they were locked in with some kind of air. Like, they were in a bubble. Everything else was vacuum sealed, but the buns had some sort of air floating around them that I assume is just some method of preservation that I'm blissfully unaware of, but it really concerned me when I grabbed them out of the box.
These were manufactured in the late 80s. I thought I knew which one was warm and which was cold, and I just bit into my cold one, which was not ideal, but also this is what I used to bite into all the time at the lunch table, and I just... It surprises me.
I just took a bite of my cold one. And let me tell you, again, all I taste is condiments. This is like, you might as well just take ketchup and mustard and put a spoon in a box with a candy bar and a Capri Sun, and you've got this same thing. What kind of Capri Sun did you get with it?
It is a...
Do you get a Roarin' Waters?
Wild Cherry Waterfall. Yep, Roarin' Waters.
Yeah, I got one of those too. It's actually kind of bad. I mean, for Capri Sun, it's a little... less than super sugary.
Let me take a sip.
Yeah.
All right. I am unsheathing the sword from the plastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sticking the sword right in the stone. No puncture through the back, which is rare.
That is rare.
And here we go. I love that.
God damn it.
I really, really love that. I hope that they sell these. Apart from Lunchables, and if not, I'm not to stock up on Lunchables.
Let me tell you that I know you're about to go out and buy about 20 of these hot dog Lunchables. That's probably your only...
I don't like these hot dogs, but I do like this drink.
Well, I'm pretty sure they sell it individually.
All right, I got my hot or mildly lukewarm dog to eat, and there's some sweat on it, so I'm going to eat it before I can look at it any longer.
I am already on to dessert, and I am, again, I'm wondering, like, how much I paid for this. I ordered online, so money didn't matter at the time. If these two miniature beef jerky sticks with the worst buns ever, and one Capri Sun and a bite-sized Hershey's bar cost more than $3, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, I forget the cost, but it was around there. So, I'm eating my my warmed dog, and... I'm just sad for my younger self that there weren't microwaves in my cafeteria.
It's a lot better.
A warm hot dog, I don't care how old I am, that stuff's delicious.
Oh, absolutely. I paid that. Oh, man. You know what? I just pulled up my online grocery store order to figure out how much I paid for that nightmare. I said if it was over $3, I'd be mad. Guess how much it was?
$3.01, baby.
$2.99. So, you know what? I'm all right with it. I just devoured the entire miniature Hershey's milk chocolate bar. It's your standard Halloween kid's size Hershey bar. Great. I mean, they've been in business since what? Jesus Christ, like the year one, I'm pretty sure, is when they established themselves in Philadelphia. So very good. Very good chocolate bar. Again, I think the hot dogs are fine. You'll never hear me complain about a hot dog. I'll eat a hot dog on any bun. As long as I got mustard, I don't even need ketchup, just mustard. I'll eat it, I'll be happy, and I'll go on with my life. But with that said, I wouldn't recommend you go out and buy this Lunchable. I would say buy normal hot dogs and avoid hot dog Lunchables. That's my 10 cents.
I am definitely going to do some more research into the other Lunchable options, because I didn't like this entree. But not only did I really like this Wild Cherry Waterfall Capri Sun, the combination with the Hershey's chocolate and cherry together.
Oh, my God.
I love that flavor combination, and I'm taking sips and bites back and forth right now.
I believe it.
This is good stuff.
It's not. It's really not. You need to know that. Also, I'm still astounded by the fact that, like, I really want you to know that mini hot dog Lunchables were not a thing for people my age. Like, that, we had your pile of meat, pile of cheese, pile of crackers with a candy bar. Fill in any meat or cheese you want. We had all those options. And then pizza was on the scene, which was like the holy grail. Like, if you had pizza Lunchables at lunch at school, it was basically like whipping out a stack of like 15 holographic Charizard Pokemon cards. Like, you were the guy people wanted to do business with. One Lunchable pizza could get you like answers to a test, a full essay written by somebody else. It was amazing the power a pizza Lunchable held. And if they had had mini hot dog Lunchables, I feel like they would have been pretty valuable. It's just the novelty of having a tiny hot dog, I think, goes a long way. But as an adult, no. Go buy like Jack Link's beef sticks instead and a loaf of bread and you're fine. You're in the same boat.
I'm going to agree with you there. Do you think we should turn this, at least for the time being, into a Lunchable podcast?
Oh, my.
Or do we branch out from here?
I think we almost have to stick to Lunchables from now on. I'm honestly curious what other types of Lunchables exist.
I mean, I looked on their website. There's between the ones that include drinks and the ones that don't, and like there's ones that are like some sort of healthier option. There's like 20 or 30 different Lunchables these days.
This is, okay, so... Yes, we're a strictly Lunchable podcast from now on. Let's just get past that and acknowledge the fact that we're only reviewing Lunchables. But so you told me about these mini hot dogs. This was your pick. Went with it, and I told other people about it. And so many people my age, not your young, youthful 26, said, what? Like, everyone else was as taken aback as I was when you recommended this. And I think my favorite line was, what fresh hell is this that Lunchables is making hot dogs? But I think we should do the rest of the new...
It would take us through the year, I think.
I don't want to know what other options they have, because pizza, again, pizza was revolutionary to me. And I'm assuming they've had at least like one or two more meetings to come up with other options. So I'm very concerned about what else they're cranking out, but I'm very down to review them with you.
So you had never had this Lunchable before, and there's plenty of Lunchables neither of us have had before. 10 Things I Hate About You is a movie that neither of us have seen before.
Correct.
And there are plenty of movies in this world that I personally have not seen. Movies that are widely loved or critically acclaimed or just culturally relevant. And sometimes when I finally get around to watching one of these movies, it's a great experience because I'm finally getting to appreciate this thing in the same way that other people do. And like, just an example, a few weeks ago, I watched Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid for the first time. And I just loved it. Yes. I even got to bond about it with my parents because they've loved it for decades.
Nathan, my mom, when I told her Aiden and I were watching Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, my mom lost her mind. She, like, my whole life, my family has loved that movie, and she loved it. But when I told her that, she was like, she used to be a flight attendant. She goes, I had both of them on my flights separately, but they were both so good, and they were both so nice, and they both were flirty. And I was like, all right, leave it there, Mom, but I'm glad. And she would, like, it brought me into, like, an inner ring with my family. I had seen it as a child, but showing it to my child cemented the fact that I was the best in the family, for sure.
I cannot believe that my parents never showed it to me. It made me, for the first time in my life, it made me want to be a cowboy when I watched
it. Yes.
And like, and when I was young, I was into like, when I like played, you know, with my friends pretending to be stuff, it was always like sci-fi or like knights or something. I feel like cowboys and robbers, I was like before my time, kind of, maybe.
Oof.
But this, I saw it and I was like, man, if I saw this when I was a kid, I would have been like, I need a hat and a holster stat.
You don't even understand. Aiden went, like, we paused the movie because we make popcorn halfway through every movie. We paused to make popcorn. He went in his room. He came back out. He had his cap gun fully loaded with new caps, which blew my eardrums out during the movie and also scared the hell out of me. He had his police badge, like his sheriff's badge. He was decked out, and he has done nothing but want to be a cowboy since he watched that movie. It is quintessential cowboy porn, I have to say. Like, it is so satisfying to watch. Like, these are cowboys. These are guys who are just out there surviving, doing whatever they have to do to get by. And they're not inherently bad. They're just existing. But you know what? They'll bend the rules. And I feel like I watched this movie when I was honestly probably 6 or 7. And I feel like I was shaped by it so much. what a good movie. What a good movie.
So our review is over now.
Yeah. Now that our Butch Cassidy episode is done.
Where I wanted to go with this is that, you know, my parents loved that movie for decades. They had been on the Butch Cassidy boat since before I was born, and I'm just now getting on that boat too, and it's great. I love it. Like, I wish I had been on that boat earlier, but all that matters is that I'm on that boat now.
Mm-hmm.
I watched 10 Things I Hate About You, and I realized I missed this boat entirely, and there is no way for me to catch up to it. Had I been on the boat when it left the station, I would probably still be on that boat, but now, watching this movie for the first time as an adult with my youth behind me, I'm never going to be able to connect with this movie in the same way as people who first saw it when they were at an age where they could identify with these characters. Yeah. And that makes me sad because this is the exact kind of movie viewing experience that I dread.
See,
because I wish I had seen this when I was younger, but I didn't, and I could never change that.
Here's what, I fully agree with you, but here's where we differ is that as a kid, I saw all these movies. I had free reign of every movie I wanted to watch. Like, I was watching South Park at age like 7. So as a kid, I learned to identify with these adult themes and things that were completely unrelated to me. I could totally get on that page and enjoy the movie. And so watching this, I was transported back to like my 1999 this movie came out?
Yeah, I think so.
I was transported back to like my 9-year-old self watching this, and that's kind of the mindset I went into it as. And I liked it. I liked it, and I think because I could, I don't know. I feel like whenever I watch a movie, I try to go into with the optimal perspective. So like if I'm watching Butch Cassidy, it's me as a young kid who really likes cowboys. If I'm watching this movie, it's me as a young high schooler who has no idea how the world actually works and just thinks of high school as like the end all be all. But I was surprised. This movie surprised me in a lot of ways. A, it gave me the worst movie villain in the history of movie villains. B, it gave me one of my favorite actors, and I can't remember what else I know him from, but the dad in this movie of the two girls.
Oh, he's wonderful.
He's astounding in this movie, but like I've been trying to, I haven't done any, like I didn't even type his name into Google or anything. So when I say I've been doing research, it's in my own mind.
Kevin, I was thinking the exact same thing. I went through his entire IMDb and I still don't know what it is.
I know.
There's something that I know him from that he plays a very similar character as this.
Yes.
And it's something that I remember vividly.
Let me tell you.
I looked through his entire list. I have no clue what it is.
Here are the two that I know he's in that I love. One of my favorite movie of all time, Best in Show. He is in it for a brief period, but I think the reason my young self knew him was from The Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy. He plays like the rival scientist, I feel like, in that.
I never saw either of those, so those aren't those. That's not them for me.
I don't know,
but
I know him. I know him. Like he came on screen, and I thought, oh, I love that guy. What happened to him? Where did he go? And I don't know, but he is honestly my favorite part of this movie.
All of the like adult side characters are wonderful.
Yes.
I love him. I love the teacher.
Yes.
Who has no time for anyone's shit.
Yep.
I love Allison Janney, who unfortunately is in it for like one scene.
Let me tell you.
I was really hoping she was in it more.
My first notes on this movie were, A, the title screen is the most 90s title screen I've ever seen. Like it is peak title screen. And then on top of that, they throw on a Bare Naked Ladies song, and I was like, yes, I'm going to absolutely love this movie. And then I was like, oh, the soundtrack's going to be great. The outfits are great. And then it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and boom, Allison Janney hits. And I was like, Allison Janney is in this movie? She is one of my all-time favorite comedic actresses. She is in one of my favorite... I know I just said my favorite movie was
Best in Show.
Best in Show. But Drop Dead Gorgeous is almost tied with it, and she plays a phenomenal part in that. I love Allison Janney. I'm also very disappointed she wasn't in more of this movie. But yes, every adult character we relate to more now as adults, which makes sense.
Okay, so I wanna kind of go off that, because it's really interesting to me how you use the example of, like, when you're talking about how this transported you, you say it made you feel like a 9-year-old watching this as opposed to like a high schooler watching this, because I think that this is aimed at kids, like, it's aimed at like preteens who like think this is what high school
but
is
Nathan,
like.
That's what I was doing at 9. I was wondering, I was watching Good Morning America and wondering, like, huh, I wonder what calc will be like in high school.
I get why so many people love this movie and why it would be so formative for someone who's growing up, because it fulfills pretty much every teenager's fantasies. Because on one hand, you have this like cute, mysterious bad boy who turns out to be really deep and funny and charming, and he expresses his feelings through these like big romantic gestures. And on the other hand, you have the popular girl who turns down the jock because she falls in love with like the smart, quiet kid, he's because he's nice to her.
He's not a jock, he's a model.
Whatever, you know what I mean? He fits that archetype. Yeah. And she falls in love instead with the quiet, smart kid because he's nice to her. And I feel like if I had seen this when I was 15, or like more like 13, I probably would have really enjoyed it, because just like Julia Stiles or Joseph Gordon-Levitt's characters in this movie, I too was a delusional kid who thought that the perfect partner would just fall into my lap with little to no effort.
Yes.
These couples are barely even relationships. They're both just one person existing while another person fulfills their fantasies.
This is why movies like Not Another Teen Movie exist. This is exactly the issue with this movie, is it is a joke to reality. It is not even... Like, I mean, hey, let's just talk about one of my biggest issues with this movie is the parking lot activity at this high school is out of control. Like, what is going on where they can just all, like, hundreds of kids can hang out in the parking lot? Like, oh, we've got cowboys over here. We've got our Rastas over here. Beautiful people, coffee kids. But, like, everyone's just not in class, hanging out in the parking lot for apparently hours on end. None of it makes sense. It's not a practical movie. It is a movie made for preteens imagining what high school is going to be like. It's just like American Pie. It's just like all of those movies that are like, oh, you're going to go to this house party that's going to have trays of fucking tequila shots. God, I really was trying not to swear. Trays of tequila shots. And that doesn't happen at parties until you're... Yeah, I've still yet to see it at a party myself. it's absurd when you look at it from the angle of an adult, which is why you almost have to approach this movie as a young kid in the late 90s, early 2000s. You're wondering what high school is going to be like. It's a big, scary thing. And this movie makes it seem like not a big, scary thing, but something that, like, if you just make a couple of good decisions, you're going to everything in your life is going to work out.
And I get that now. And like, I know that like there is an entire genre of movies, especially in this era, in this late 90s, early 2000s era, that are just the complete wrong idea about high school and college. Like, I get that. I thought this movie was not one of those. Like, this is a film that comes up so often when people talk about their favorite movies of all time. Like, no one talks about American Pie being one of their favorite movies of all time, or any movies like that.
Let's take a timeout. You know what, Nathan? Have you ever seen the movie Grind?
Never even heard of it.
Oh my God. It's a movie I saw as a very young kid. It is a terrible movie, objectively. Terrible. But it is one of my favorites of all time, because I saw it as a kid and it made me feel like I could do whatever I wanted. It made me feel like no matter what happened, I would always have my friends. And it's so important to think of how old the people you're talking to were when these movies came out. Because this movie, if I had seen it when I was 9, 10, 11, 12... it would probably be one of my favorite movies. I mean, the storyline is solid. The characters are solid. The acting is solid. I have no issues with any of those. In relation to reality, is it realistic? No. But it's still a fun ride. And I think if I had seen it as a young kid, I would have probably based, you know, my expectations of high school and people getting older and who I should hang out with a lot more on this movie. And it would probably have been way more impactful. We're watching this movie as I'm 56 and you're what, 39?
That is correct. And that's why I started this conversation with the fact that I'm sad that this is how we're watching this. I feel like this is a pointless conversation for us to sit here and say, I'm like trying to analyze it. And I'm like, I don't know how to even think about this movie beyond the fact that I am way, way too old to be watching this for the first time.
But you don't, like, you watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off the other week and...
Yeah, there are plenty of movies that are intended for a younger audience that I watch now and I can still totally appreciate. Like, there's tons of examples. And there's movies that I love when I was a kid that I watch them now and I'm like, I think about, do I just like it because I already had this love for it? Or is it genuinely still a great movie? Yeah. I don't know. But I'm seeing this film through such an unfortunate lens.
But here's what I compare it to is, like, you just watched The Matrix for the first time as well. And it was, you know, you being like, wow, this movie created so many tropes and so many, you know, stereotypical things that other movies repeated. And, like, this movie essentially designed high school romantic comedies for the next, like, 10 years. And it's got to get some weight behind it just because of... Almost, it's just imitated so often, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you there. I think there's plenty of movies that were inspired by it and then are much better than it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how art works, is that things inspire other works that kind of surpass them.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, man, I just, like, I get, you know, the cast is pretty great. Like, Heath Ledger is wonderful. Like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a charming little kid.
We don't have spoiler snacks. I already ate my Hershey bar, so can we just get to the point where we can talk fully about the movie? Because I have some things about all of these characters you're bringing up.
Yeah, sure. So, spoiler warning from here on out, we're not going to do a separate segment, just spoilers. If you haven't seen it, it's on Disney+. Get around
Nathan,
to it, I guess.
Nathan paid $5 for it on Amazon because he didn't type it into Google before he wanted to look it up.
That could have contributed to my opinion.
But yes, spoilers from here on out. Turn it off if you haven't watched this. If you're the other three people on Earth who have not seen this movie, turn it off. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is great in this, but the one thing... I was, like, honestly upset at the end of this movie, and maybe this is why I liked it, but when he, like... A, she totally blows him off, is a complete monster to him, and then she just kisses him in a car after he's, like, telling her how terrible she is, and one kiss just like, oh, every terrible thing she does is gone. And it's, what? Like, no, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you could do so much better. You're apparently at, like, a high school that's the size of 10 colleges with a parking lot the size of one college and 18 stories for you to throw down your party flyers on. It's like, why this one girl who objectively sucks for the majority of the movie?
Let's see. I think it doesn't really make sense from either side of the relationship because, like, for her, I mean, you're saying that he can get better than her, but also, like, why did she fall for him? He literally just says, I've been so nice to you, I deserve something, and she kisses him, and I'm like, where did this come from on either side?
I think that kiss was purely guilt-driven. I think when he's...
She's like, hey, shut up.
I think when he's railing on her, like, oh, you did all this, and, like, why would you do it? And then she's just like, I'm gonna kiss you, because you like me. And it was game over. And I did not like that part of this movie. I honestly was very upset. But everything else was pretty good. I am very happy that I figured out the guy who gives Joseph Gordon-Levitt the tour of the school.
Yeah, he's the elf from Santa
correct,
Claus.
Correct, correct. I, like, stared at him for 3 seconds, and then I was like, oh my god. I wonder if I don't... When did the Santa Claus come out?
Was this mid-90s. It was before this, for sure.
It was before.
Yeah, it was like 94 or something.
So he went from playing a 500-year-old elf to a 12-year-old kid with a dick on his face.
Did you know that Gabrielle Union was 29?
Can I
when she
talk about
this?
Gabrielle Union in this? Because it took me 3/4 of the movie to even realize that was Gabrielle Union. She was 29?
Either 29 or 27. She was late 20s.
Hey, everyone in this school appears to be 27 to 29. Like, nobody looks like a high schooler. Joseph Gordon-Levitt somehow pulls it off because he looked like, even on Third Rock from the Sun, he was on that for like 8 seasons and he still looked like he was 10 years old. he looks young in this, but everyone else, I was like, you're all so old. You all look just as old as your teacher. Like, what is the casting person doing here? Doesn't make sense. My first note on Bianca, by the way, and JGL.
Mm-hmm.
I noted that they dropped the R-bomb in this movie, which is very, very 90s of them.
Uh-huh. 'Cause
that wasn't an issue back then. But my note after R-bomb that was circled is JGL tutoring Bianca for French. Sub bullet, she effing sucks. That's my whole note on her. I hate Bianca. That's my one issue with this movie is Bianca deserves to be like covered in blood at a dance, or like Carrie, or totally spurned by a group of people. She doesn't deserve to just get like this great guy who's been chasing her. F that.
I'm just kind of curious at like where you're even getting that about her, because I feel like there's just not hardly anything to her character to like or dislike.
There's
she's
so
I think that
much
her
to
and
dislike.
JGL's relationship is like very clearly the like the B plot of the movie, and neither of them, there's like almost nothing to either of them at all. They're just like, it's his interest in her that spurs the actual plot of the movie, which is Heath Ledger and Julia Stiles.
Hey, if you tell me, all right, Heath Ledger and Julia are the meat of this movie. Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bianca, I'd say they both suck, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt is at least like a decent person in this movie. She, from the start, every line that comes out of her mouth is meant to frame her as like a dumb, ignorant person, I feel like. And then she makes,
sure,
she decides to like chase after a model boy just because he's good looking. Like, I don't think there's anything redeeming about her, so I feel like every line that came out of her mouth before she kisses Joseph Gordon-Levitt is meant to make you not like her.
To me, like the biggest problem with this movie is that like most rom-coms are about a couple, and this is about two couples. And because it's like spread so thin, all the characters are just pretty uninteresting to me. Like Heath Ledger is really the only person who I think has the depth of like a real character.
I
like even Julia Stiles is a pretty flat character. Like there's not really that much to her at all. I just don't get what there is to latch onto or like root for in this
movie. It is the uncertainty of high school. That's what's to latch onto. That's why our generations, well, we live in separate ones, but our generations both liked it, is because everyone else saw it when they were young and were like, oh, what do we do? And it's like, oh, we're going to be okay in high school no matter what. Heath Ledger and Julia Stiles are the meat of the movie. If you think Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bianca are even important, you could take them out of this movie, save us all 20 minutes, and it would still be just as good. I don't care for either of them. Bianca had one good line, and that was it. I happen to like being adored, thank you, to her sister. And after that, nothing good. I the one thing I'm very happy about this movie with is it has introduced to me a new standard, a new peak for worst people in movie history. Billy Zane from Titanic has been my peak, unredeemable character, no good qualities, just career absolutely destroyed because he was always referred to as that monster from Titanic. And now I understand, I've watched this, and Joey came on screen, and I wrote down, like, he's my new hair inspiration, because he's got great hair, great volume.
He sure does.
And I thought, man, I can slick my hair back now, so he's going to be my new hair inspiration. I'm excited to see how his character turns out. And he's the absolute worst movie character I have ever encountered.
And then you shaved your head.
I shaved my head. I tattooed Joey on my chest to remind me to never be that way. No, it is. He is the absolute worst. The absolute nothing redeeming. Like, there's so many points where he is like, oh, I'm interested in you. And then he'll go to a different girl. Like when Bianca and her friend, Gabrielle Union, whose character name I don't remember, he just like snatches Gabrielle after Bianca says no. And then like the next day is like, Bianca, I want to go to prom with you and like let everyone know that we're together. He's just a pure monster. Just an absolute monster.
You're getting another thing that I don't understand about this movie, which is that, okay, everyone, including him, is so wishy-washy.
Yeah.
And yet, he invests a lot of money in going out on a date with this one girl at, like you said, a massive school.
Yeah.
What moment in this movie shows you why he cares so much about her in particular?
I think you're disproportionately putting the power on how much he cares versus how much money he has at his disposal.
Do you think that he's maybe having similar investment opportunities with maybe 10 or 20 girls and he's just hoping one of them works out? He's like an investor in that regard.
I don't know about that. All I'm saying is this guy clearly, he parks his car in the middle of a fucking street at one point. Julia Stiles says, "Do you mind?" And he says, "Not at all." She backs into like his Ferrari. He has way too much money to throw around. And on that note, he is the worst negotiator I have ever seen portrayed. He starts off at $20 and then he somehow convinces him to get up to $50 for like the first date because he says going to a movie will cost $50. And then by the end, they're doing $100 a day. This guy is he's just got an endless wad of cash in his pocket. He is so bad at negotiating. Like, my jaw literally dropped when he agreed to $100 a day and was just like, yep, okay. Like, he is
like
the worst.
Like, Heath Ledger's motivation here is to prolong this as much as possible and to come close to dating her without actually dating her.
The thing is, he was so offended when Heath proposed $50 instead of the original $20. He said, like, he was just absolutely appalled by it. And then he gets to $100 a day.
Oh no, it wasn't 20 to 50. It was 20 to 30.
Oh.
And that moment right there told me so much about, I'm like, oh yeah, he's a teenager. The difference between $20 and $30 is a big difference when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
And then he's pulling out $100 every day, which is why I'm like, how much money does he have? Yep. He was really concerned about $10 earlier.
He was.
And now he spent at least $600 to $700 to get date that he didn't get.
Yeah, there's some holes. I think my favorite line, because when the elf from Santa Claus and Joseph Gordon-Levitt go to a bar and they said, "Is this what a bar's like?" Which I did like, but they talk to Heath and they're like trying to get him to go, and he's like, "What is it about this girl? Does she have beer flavored nipples?" And I could not believe. I could not believe that was written into a high schooler script. Like, no high schooler in the world I drank plenty of beer in high school, but no high schooler in the world is going to come up with, "Does she have beer-flavored nipples?" Nobody is that dependent on the taste of beer.
No, here's the key. Someone who has drank beer did not write that. It's someone who never has and thinks that it must taste great.
It's a 60-year-old guy who only joy in life is beer, and that's who wrote that line.
It's one or the other.
Let me tell you. Yeah, there's no other way. This movie, it came out around the year 2000. Obviously, some lines that are troublesome now.
God, there's a whole like 5-minute portion early on where it's just line after line. I'm like, yeah, they couldn't make any of this today.
They could not. Also, Joey's a fucking creep in the fullest extent. And so is like some other guy who keeps thanking Heath for like being like, "Hey, this girl's super drunk." Very strange.
Yeah.
But I'm not helping this movie. But I mainly wanted to hit on the part that they go to this party, the NBA party. It's supposed to only be for NBAs. Oh, here's Nigel with the brie, which explains why so many people recommended brie for us to eat this episode. But with like, it goes from doorbell ring to two DJs just having their gear set up.
Right.
And people
full rig.
People drinking out of Budweiser branded cups in like 6 seconds. And I was like, what is going on?
It's not like a madhouse party. It's like a very elaborately staged party.
Yes. It's not like a kids could pull this off. It's like there had to be some adults involved in the planning of this. And apparently a dress code as well. It was so strange. Like, trays of shots at a high school party it's the most absurd concept I've ever seen in a movie. I was very upset by the fact there was somebody with a tray of tequila shots. Just doesn't make sense.
Which would result in deaths.
Oh my God.
If there was a tray of tequila shots.
Oh my God, yeah. It's just insane. And like, here's my other issue. Like, that party seems staged, yes. And then Heath is, like, trying to save Julia because she's hammered. Brings her across the street, and look at this. The classic double tree rope swing just casually at the neighbor's house. Everyone's got a good two swings from one branch hanging side by side.
It was a different time, Kevin.
Yeah, it was. It was a different time. It was a different time.
Do you remember those ab cruncher machines?
Oh, yeah. My mom had one.
That the dad uses? Yeah. Yeah, my parents had one, too. And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, wow. Those, like, don't exist anymore, but were everywhere back then.
That, also Sister Hazel songs in the same boat. one of those came on later. They existed back then, which is crazy, because they do not anymore. One thing I also, like, at the beginning of this movie, I kept listening to Heath Ledger talk, and I was like, is he supposed to have an accent? What is going on?
I think that early on he is going in and out of, like, trying to suppress it.
Yes.
And then, but then, like, halfway through, I mean, I'm just assuming they shot the movie chronologically, which we don't know, but, like, halfway through the movie, it's just full-on Australian.
Yeah.
And I'm like, was I just wrong early on? But I'm glad that you said that, because I thought the exact
it
same
it is thing. Addressed. It is addressed at some point. He says, because I had written down a lot of notes about his accent. Like, how was this? If this movie is so well known, how does nobody talk about his blatant accent? And he says he lived in Australia till he was 10. And it's like one line. That's it.
So they like added in a line to excuse why he's very bad at an American accent.
Not a good English accent by any means.
It's just like wild that this same guy became. I mean, he gave some, like, incredible performances, 10 years later.
A Knight's Tale, the best movie ever made.
Absolutely.
this movie, I feel like, really set a lot of people up for success. And this movie brought me back to when I was younger and things seemed simpler and I wasn't trapped in my house. And I really liked coming at this movie from a young man. Like, the dad, again, the dad in this movie saved it for me. If that dad is not in this movie is a bad movie. But because he's in it and he says lines like, kissing doesn't keep me from being up to my elbows in placenta, as well as those Dawson River kids. Like, he, every line that comes out of his mouth is just pure gold. Oh, man, yeah, I don't know. This movie, I liked this movie. I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed experiencing it because I knew it was something I've missed out on for so long. And it's not a masterpiece by any means, but it's the quintessential high school movie. Like, this is when a movie like Not Another Teen Movie bases a majority of its plot on your movie, you know you've done something well enough to stick around. Like, you've set the stereotype, and that is a good thing to do.
I will say, as much as I didn't care about the characters or their relationships or the outcome or anything, the poem got me choked up. Like, it was great.
All right, wait. Before we get to the poem, I do want to say that Heath Ledger and Julia's prom fashion were, like, timeless and perfect, and I don't understand if they hired a separate costume designer for the rest of the movie than they did for prom, but, like, they showed up, he's got his unbuttoned shirt and, like, loose tux, no tie, and she's got this beautiful dress. I was like, oh, I did prom wrong. And then I looked around at everyone else, and I was like, oh, no, they just did it right. I mean, I was very impressed by the fashion they went to. Can we talk about the dad's, like, shining emotional moment?
Was that with the college part?
Yeah,
when he says
like, you know, I've become a spectator. Bianca still lets me play a few innings. You've had me on the bench for years, and when you leave for school, I can't even watch the game. That's like broke me. That's when I started tearing up, just because it's that type of dad that's, like, funny, super protective, but also clearly really cares about his two daughters. It's just nice to see. But then after that, yeah, that poem. I don't even know what to say about the poem. Because the whole time I kept thinking, like, why is this called 10 Things I Hate About You? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, me too.
Because you expect, in my mind, I guess, when I went into this movie, I expected it to be, like, early on, somebody lays out 10 reasons they hate about somebody. And by the end, they're together. That was my conception of this movie. And it is not that. It's not that, surprisingly.
Honestly, I think that this demonstrates the power of a very strong ending, because for all that I really didn't like about it, the last 5 minutes,
yeah,
I was like, oh man, like, that was nice. That was really nice.
It was, again, the last 5 minutes, an absurd, absurd amount of parking lot high school activity, followed by a rooftop concert for the credits. Like, I did, I, God, the 90s were a wild time, but like, did you watch the bloopers that came after the credits?
Yeah, and I wanted to say how it is so fun watching bloopers from like a dance or a party when there's no music playing and everyone's just kind of bobbing to nothing.
That is one of my favorite things in the world, is just, like, if I'm talking to somebody about a movie or like just production or anything like that, and I say like, can you imagine filming a scene at like a club with no music? And everyone's like, why would you ever have to do that? And I'm like, that's how it normally goes. And those bloopers, I was just like, oh my God, this is so strange. Like, I could never do it. I could never do it.
And I mean, those shoots, you know, those shoots for those scenes.
Oh,
and those
hours, are like days. Hours, days. Absolutely. You're dancing to no music. And like, you're supposed to vibe with the people around you too, which is the worst part. Like, you're all making up a song in your head essentially to dance right. to.
And you're all at different tempos. Yeah,
and it's not going to work, but you are forced to make it work. The bloopers were good though. I don't know. I think overall, yes, we watched this movie 20 years too late. But I think if we go back 20 years in time with our perspective when we view it, it's okay. I just think Joey, the character in this movie, I have, again, he's just surpassed Billy Zane, which I never thought was possible. But Joey has no redeeming qualities whatsoever. None.
Speaking of things with no redeeming qualities, you can find all of our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm, or wherever else you find your podcasts.
That is 100% correct, Nathan. And if you like what you hear and want to support the show or pay us to date somebody, feel free to leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on.
If you donate $100 to our podcast per day,
yes,
we will eat literally anything you want.
That, you know what? That's a fact. I want to make that known. For $100 a day, I'll do a lot of things, and eating almost anything. I can't think of anything I wouldn't eat for $100.
You know what costs a lot less than $100 is Fast Food Film Friends merch, which you can grab some of your very own at fastfoodfilmfriends.com.
I am upping the cost to $100 across the board. Bandanas, water bottles, stickers, or sweatshirts, you're paying $100. If you can't get your fix because we're only putting out about an episode every quarantine right now, you can follow us on Instagram at Fast Food Film Friends, Twitter at FFFFFFFFFF Podcast. It's just four. Facebook at Fast Food Film Friends, or email us. Please email us at fastfoodfilmfriends@gmail.com to let us know what you want us to eat, what you want us to watch, how your day's going, if you need emotional support. We are here for you. Literally, we're not here for each other. We don't even like each other that much.
And until I talk to you again, you piece of shit, farewell.